Hello and welcome to the Navy Blue Corner. I'm Ian, joined as always by my good mate Lockie. And the Blues have done just enough to get over the line against Richmond to start the season 2-0. The perfect start as we head into this strange bye week. Although weirdly, it does feel like it's come at the right time, even though it is so early in the season. Lockie, it was another nervy end to a game of football involving Carlton. How are you feeling a few days removed from the win? And are you like me where you really feel like you need this week off to at least let the heart rate sort of relax for once?
You've hit on some fantastic points during that intro, to be honest. Lots of the emotions that I've been feeling. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about things now, pretty calm, feel like we're on top of the world. But there was some very mixed emotion on the night. Not a feeling that I can really remember ever having at a Carlton game, to be honest. But we're feeling good now.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Like the perfect start, 2-0. It's everything we wanted.
Can't be better than that.
Before the season started, knowing that this bye was going to cause a bit of an interruption, but with the players that we've got coming back in a couple of weeks, it does really just feel like it's the perfect time for a little bit of a break. And at least we're going in happy. But let's kick the episode off where we always do in the Navy Noise segment. Yes. It's where we talk about all the hot topics, all the big news stories, all the best things out of the game that has just happened. And while we will talk about the Richmond game, the first thing that we have to cover, probably the most fun big news of the week, was Carlton had its Hall of Fame ceremony. We've got our own. Carlton clearly have theirs. Unfortunately, us, we didn't get the big man involved, but the great Brendan Favola is now in the Carlton Hall of Fame. I mean, what did you make of it when you first heard it? And do you have any just great words to say about such an icon of the Carlton Footy Club?
Totally. I mean, yeah, he's such a pivotal part of my childhood. Goes without saying. Like, it was quite a dark era for the Blues, I guess, when you and I started understanding, you know, we're old enough to start understanding football and getting into Carlton. And he was a shining light in all that, and just so many incredible memories with him, of course. So yeah, goes without saying that he's a Hall of Famer for our great club.
Yeah, like so many people have said it, but we need to repeat it again. It's just when we'll go into the footy every single week and there was not much to get excited about, you knew you weren't going to probably come away with too many victories. There was nothing really keeping you happy about the Carlton Footy Club, except for Fev. He was the reason you went. You knew he was going to kick a bag. And just one of the most trustworthy in front of goal kicks I've ever seen. Yeah. Every time he got those jukes out and took a big clunk, you just knew, doesn't matter where he is on the ground, he'll go back and absolutely slot it. Do you have a favorite Fev moment or a couple that you want to throw out there?
Yeah, I mean, the Essendon game is, I'm sure others would have talked about this. That's the one that's just so clear in the mind. And I remember watching that game back in the day. And just, yeah, obviously how he just single-handedly turned this game around for one of the, you know, greatest comebacks. Probably the greatest Carlton comeback ever.
Yeah, no, he's a superstar. And yeah, I think the only other one that really I remember so vividly was that goal against Adelaide. Where you he still put that through the big sticks. I have no idea how that floated in there, but he's just every single big moment ever, that was Fev. He'd make it happen. And I guess with everything he has been through in his life and the sad, I guess, end to his Carlton career, it is an interesting thing when you talk about the Hall of Fame and you do wonder with these football clubs and how kind of political it can get at certain stages, how long it would have taken for Fev to go in would I guess the club finally be over everything that happened and just be able to celebrate what he did on the football field and did for all the fans out there. Such an incredible human to the fans. So I think just such an amazing thing that I guess we finally moved on a little bit as a club and we were able to honour such a great footballer.
Yeah, so it was a good night all around. I'm sad I couldn't make it this year, but you know, you obviously got the invite.
Yeah, it was a lovely night. I'm definitely feeling it today. If I'm stumbling over my words a little bit, could be because I'm still kind of drunk. Who knows? It's been a big hungover day for me trying to struggle through it. But no, the ceremony and the whole night was amazing. I was fortunate enough to go to the Best and Fairest at the end of last year, and just the vibes of the place then was amazing because of the season we just had. Finally, Carlton's playing some good football. Felt very much like that again. I've been to a few years removed from that, and the vibe wasn't amazing, but at the moment, the pace is just absolutely jumping. And to go into it 2-0, I think that definitely helps. But no, Fev was great. Had an incredible speech. We know how sort of charismatic he is and great with his words. It was really emotional at times when he touched on obviously some of those lower points. And my big sort of takeaway from Fev was just the way he spoke about fans and the football club. He had a big moment. He was a massive St. Kilda Nuffie as a kid, and he was saying that before one of the grand finals, he was trying to get a signature from one of the St. Kilda players, and they said no. They turned him down, and he went from that moment on, if I ever play AFL football, if I ever become anything, I'm never going to not sign an autograph, because like that hurt me, and it made me not want to watch the footy. So I think that was the kind of character he was. I remember going to a few family days as a youngster, and he was always there signing autographs for way too long. He even mentioned there was a 2-hour family day, and he'd been there gone for 5 hours, and his wife's ringing him going, where are you, mate? You said it finished 2 hours ago. I was like, I'm still signing autographs. And she's like, you've got to get out of there. And Fez goes, no, I have to stay here until every single thing is signed. And that's a testament to what he was, you know, not a perfect human being, but what he gave to the football club, I think he can never question. And we just need more people like that, that truly understand the fan base and are able to sort of give back in such a spectacular way. I just love Fev, big part of the childhood, of course.
I love that. That's a couple of great anecdotes. So I hope you came away with a signature or two last night then. You must have.
No, I'm not a big signature man. No, I was helping the great, and I love the plug, the WA Blues. I was helping them get a couple of lovely signatures for a few of their raffles and auctions to give away throughout the year. So there's, if you're a WA Blues supporter, mate, you got to head over to their socials and go to a couple of events, because there's going to be some big giveaways this year. It's going to be very, very exciting. But
love it.
Let's talk about the game that just happened, Lockie. Carlton v Richmond. Probably the biggest takeaway for me from the win was that we won another way. We found another way to win. Our biggest strength in probably that contest and center clearances was really taken away from us. I thought we struggled immensely in that area. Found a different way to win a game of footy, scoring through turnover. I've got to sort of ask you off that. Is it simply just a positive that we're adding new layers to our game, or is it a bit of a problem that we aren't seemingly winning in the areas that we have come to dominate, knowing that there were really, apart from the third quarter against Brisbane last week, we also weren't amazing in that area?
Yeah, God, it's a great question. And like so many of your questions, it's a bit of both, I feel like.
Don't fence it.
No, this isn't going to be a fence hit. This is going to be, is there a difference between sitting on the fence and like having a foot on either side of the fence, like sitting on the fence, having a bit of both? I feel like that's different.
Okay. Well, I'll hear your reasoning before I absolutely abuse you.
Yeah, I feel like it is good that we are able to win in other ways. In terms of particularly in the way that we are scoring, like I think that is good. Like there was concern in the preseason of us being one-dimensional in that regard, and are we just going to have to use kind of brute force and effort, etc., to get all our goals, that kind of thing. So that is a positive, but it just didn't really feel like a Carlton game to me. Like I alluded to at the start, I don't know if I've felt more flat after a win than this. I don't know about you, but in the stands, we kind of had like, Dad and I had about 15 seconds of like huge emotion, excitement on the siren. And then it was just like, oh, just this weird, like, what did we even do there?
Yeah.
So I didn't feel great about that. And like you said, I'm actually so glad that we are going into the bye now, and how that will allow us to, you know, reevaluate where we are for round three.
I love that you brought up the sort of final siren, because I was so similar. It was just this relief rather than a celebration from me. And then I just noticed so many people around me really celebrating, as you should. You beat Richmond. It's a close game. It's always a great thing. But yeah, my mind immediately just went to, oh, that sucked. Like, I hated almost every second of the game. And that's not necessarily to say that we played poorly, or but it was just a bit of a scrappy game at times. It didn't go our way. Another close game that it probably shouldn't have been. I was just happy to get out of there, go home, take the 4 points, and yeah, go into the bye and have a sort of a week off to reevaluate everything, grow, then get into the season, because we knew there was going to be this sort of speed bump happening. Maybe it's a positive that we're not going in with a ridiculous amount of momentum and it has been halted. Who knows if that's the best way to look at it. But around, I guess, the different way that we were playing, I think obviously it is a positive because of the big talking point around how we play. We're too focused on the contest. We only score from clearances. We don't do it from turnover. For us to then really add that layer of our game and to look amazing doing it, I thought the way we wanted 100%. To move the football through the corridor, the quick handball chains, Cripper bursting through with pace. I don't know where this guy's got his jets from. He looked so quick out there at times. I think that's such a positive that we've added this different element of our game style. But maybe I'm doing the same thing. Maybe I'm standing on two fences here. Who knows? Because just not having that contested side of the game, every single moment the game dragged on, I just kept saying to my girlfriend next to me, like, can we just win the center clearance? We win two of these in a row, the game will be done. I'm sure we'll kick a goal off the back of it. And knowing that Richmond's midfield, it's not ridiculously strong. They've obviously got some nice players in there. We don't have Walsh, but you think we should be better. And the game, went on, Prestia goes off. They had a lot of injuries, no rotations by the end. I was pretty disappointed in how our clearances and contested game was playing out. Like, just to throw some stats out there, you know, center clearances, we were -3, then +1, +1, and then -2 for the quarters. And then contested possessions, first quarter, we were -16. Third quarter, we were -13. And then weirdly, the two quarters I thought we were best in, second and the last, +8 and +10. So it, clearly when we are winning that contested ball, we are functioning better as a team. But yeah, really disappointed that we just weren't able to go over the top of them in that aspect.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely not, neither of us are saying that it was just a game full of negatives, because obviously one and there were lots of good things. I think the tackling and the pressure is one that we could touch on as being a, you know, a positive part. And I guess another one that you can look at really positive or negative way was the inside 50s, because it felt like we had so many. So I went back and had a look. And so what has there been? There's been 13 games or something for the season so far, and we had the most inside 50s of any team in those 13 games. So it's like to have 65 inside 50s and kick that score, it shows that we were so much better than them. The fact that we were able to get it in so much, and then to not convert better, like that was the really disappointing part for me. That if we're getting the ball inside that many times, we got to be, you can't be winning by a point doing that.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting the narrative that kind of came out of the game after the win. It was so much about Richmond and that Carlton weren't great, where, and I can understand that. It's definitely part of the story of the game. I really thought it was more, we probably should have won by a lot. And that was kind of my next question I wanted to ask you. Did you find that we were lucky to win in the close one, or were we unlucky not to win by more?
Oh, definitely the latter.
Yeah.
At three-quarter time, we were down. No stress.
Yeah.
A few minutes to go. I genuinely wasn't stressed. I was like, I just felt like we were going to win it. So different to the Brisbane game.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a strange thing. Like, start of the game, we kick those first two goals. We're moving the ball at an electric pace through the corridor. And I'm starting to go, okay, here we go. 100-point win. Oh, can just sit back and relax. And I think the frustrating part, and credit to Richmond on this, was it seemingly every time we scored a goal, and maybe it took us 5-10 minutes to get one, the amount of times they immediately, within the next minute, kicked one back and just kept happening. And maybe that was a part of why it was so hard for us to get a bit of momentum in this game. Just the deflating nature of you've worked so hard to get one and to see one go the other way so quickly. it hurts, and maybe there is an element of that. But yeah, second quarter, we could have completely blown that game away, had a tremendous amount of inside 50s. And I think the quality of inside 50s and the looks at goal we seem to be generating, getting the ball into those better areas, that's been a massive improvement already, I would say. If you look at the second half last week, this whole game, I thought we were moving the ball better in that final arc, which is, it's tough because we probably don't have our best forward line out there at the moment. It's been an area that has chopped and changed a lot. Hard to get a bit of cohesion and chemistry down there, but we are doing so well with what we're getting. But yeah, just converting second quarter, converting in the last as well. You know, it's spoken about a lot, but you know, Charlie kicks that goal, goes back. We probably win that by three or four goals. You know, that's just kind of how it happens. So yeah, I'm definitely in the camp that we were unlucky not to win by more, but still very happy to finally get away with the win because it was looking nervy in the last minute or so.
It was. And I'm glad you mentioned it because I was going to. When the play that led up to that Kerno miss in the fourth, that just felt so pivotal in the narrative of the game. The way they turned it over, the way that Cunningham just beautifully hit Charlie, and that would have put us up by like three goals. And I completely agree with you. If that went through, it's... The game's done and we're going to keep going. And that was the moment that... And it's just these individual things. And you go down the other end and Kemp has an individual mistake that leads to their goal. Mm. It's all microscopic individual moments that if they don't happen or if it's a slightly different decision, the whole game is different.
Mm. And what I'm going to say now may be like the dumbest thing ever, but... I kind of want to know your thoughts on it. This is obviously just like a luck thing, but there were so many stages in that game. It just felt like the ball was bouncing straight to Richmond and like all the luck of the balls around the stoppage and it just somehow fumbles out to a Richmond player by himself or a Richmond player completely shanks the kick, hits another Richmond player on the chest. It felt like those little things were happening quite a lot. And, you know, again, credit to Richmond for being able to be in the right spots and damage you off the back of that and crumb and kick those goals. But, you know, it slightly goes your way on another day. You maybe don't fumble and don't make that mistake. You go back and kick your goal. You take a few more set shots and nail them and the margin completely changes. And I thought you mentioned the tackle pressure. I thought that was another massive, massive positive. Last week, we saw how we started the game slow. When we finally brought that manic pressure, the game changed for us. That was really there consistently for the whole game. You know, we were plus 14 in the first quarter for tackles, plus one in the second. Third quarter, we were plus 40. We were still killing it with the pressure. Last quarter, we lost by one. But when you are trying to hold on at certain stages, I understand how that kind of played out. But is it such a... How are you seeing, I guess, the difference in when we are able to bring the pressure and what that kind of does mean to us, even if we are losing that contested battle?
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's enormous. Like the feeling I had about the pressure in this game was even heightened to anything I kind of felt last year. I don't know if it's something that we focused on in the off season, but like, and it wasn't just the same guys over and over with the tackling the pressure. Like, I mean, Fogarty, my God, I don't know who taught him how to tackle, but it is no one is going to get past him when he tries to lay one. And suddenly there's a whole group of guys that are just, you know, just giving that extra effort. There's so many that come to mind. The TDK lunging tackle, holding the ball that he gets, like that's the stuff that you don't expect to see from guys like that. And it makes such a difference for us.
And it probably set the tone early on the game as well. There was that sort of Newman and Gov gang tackle on Dusty to win a free kick. And there was just a few of those big moments where Richmond could have easily been out. Our defender held strong, got that tackle, won the free kick for us. And it's just such a massive positive. That's been something for years we've said, you know, what are we? What does Carlton sort of stand for? What are we doing out there? And now it feels like you can kind of expect us to be a really grueling pressure team, everyone hounding, everyone chasing. And when we are able to do that, it really does just make us so much better. And yeah, even if we aren't winning the contested side, because I think last week against Brisbane, we weren't winning the contest. We weren't bringing any pressure. just having that allows potentially you to win off turnover and to have another facet if the clearance work isn't going our way. So yeah, it's very exciting to see these different little layers. And if that can keep going, we're going to be very, very happy throughout the year. I'm sure it'll get us more wins than the other way, but we have sort of gone around this a little bit. 2-0, that's great. That's perfect to come away from the first two games of the season with two wins, a perfect record. It's great. Massive win last week against Brisbane. We don't expect to have that. We know the bye is this week. So to go in 1-1 was going to be fine. To go in 2-0 is absolutely fantastic. However, the performances probably haven't been great. I guess sort of my question to you off the back of that is, how are you feeling about it all? And what you've seen so far, is it a case of just bank the wins, ease into the season, or are you, I guess, concerned about our imperfect performances?
I'm not concerned. I think I feel more positive now than I did after the practice games, for sure. Mm. But even before the practice games, I think, if I think back a month or 6 weeks ago, I think after seeing what I've seen, I feel even more confident. I liked what Vossi talked about in his post-game presser. Like, Jay, you want the people to be transparent, Ian. I thought he was incredibly transparent about his talk about how we tackled the preseason and how we've tried to attack this bye. I thought that was amazing insight. And if that's true, then that adds another level of confidence to me here that maybe we weren't putting the players in the best position to win these two games, but trying to set ourselves up the best for the long run. So if you look at it with that frame, I will absolutely take it.
Yeah, it was such an interesting thing for Vossi to say. I wasn't expecting that kind of insight. So I loved to hear about it. And when you watch the game, it did make sense. I was a bit disappointed on the night that we weren't really able to outrun Richmond and run over the top, knowing they were so down on rotations with the injuries they had. Yep. But we looked so gassed out there. And it makes sense now that you know that they were on these really heavy training loads, that it was almost like another kind of mini preseason. We didn't maybe back off as much as you would when the season does begin. That's the reason. And maybe that goes to why we're a little bit average in front of goal at times, because does the tiredness sort of take over? That's another interesting perspective you can have from it. But yeah, if that's what's going to allow us to take the week off and still be at a really high standard, that's such a big, big thing for us. So I'm really excited to see how fitness-wise we are, considering we've just had two massive close games. We've had to play to the final siren twice.
For sure. And it honestly added a different layer of perspective to me for a bunch of players that straight after the game, I was like, I don't know how I'm feeling about them at the moment. Whether it's guys like Williams and Fantasia, who both seemingly were like key examples of guys that were gassed in the second half of these last couple of games, or guys where like Ollie Hollins, Cottrell, these are the guys that are probably running the most in these games, the guys that are doing the most Ks, maybe the ones that would be the most affected by this preseason plan. So it just adds a whole nother layer to me of, I think we're so fortunate to be in this position now. And a lot of this needs to be reevaluated in a couple of weeks once we see a different, the work after the bye.
Oh, absolutely agree. It's such an interesting thing to look at and try to delve into. I wonder if, you know, we don't have a really close game against Brisbane, whether you then run out that Richmond game so much better or vice versa because the games aren't close. And maybe that's the best thing for us that we did. Not only did we have this really high training and a lot of conditioning, but now you've had those massive, massive close games. You've had to give everything to then come away with the wins as a positive on top of that. Can really consolidate with the week off and go in with a really strong vibe. But speaking of those sort of close contests, the stat came out immediately after that game that we are the first team in history to do this, and it's absolutely wild. Our last six wins have been by 6 points or under. We beat Collingwood. I think they had, this was like 7 points or under. So absolutely cop that. Love to see us take a record off them. But the question off the back of this is it just luck?
Oh, I feel like we answered this exact question last week when it was five in a row. Because it just doesn't, yeah, it doesn't feel like it.
Mm.
It just, I feel like we need like a, you know, a side-by-side of the last minute or so of a bunch of these games versus a year or 2 years ago.
Mm.
It just felt so much more confident, even though, I mean, there was moments where they could have kicked a goal and won.
Yeah.
But it felt more under control than it had been in the past. If you're up by less than a goal, obviously you could just lose at any moment. So there is some luck involved, but I don't think a poor team would win six in a row by six or under.
Yeah. I mean, there's always some part of luck in this. Ball bounces your way, you're able to be there at the right moments. But yeah, if it happens this much, it's definitely not. And you can see by actually just watching the game, if you look at the result, maybe you're saying, gee, yeah, Carlton really lucky. They just keep scraping through. Exactly, but when you're watching it actually play out, you're noticing those little things that the maturity from, what, 2 years ago, we finished the season losing two tight games and all shambled. We had to say out the back of it was, maybe we just can't do it. Maybe this group does not have what it takes mentally to hold out these games. Like, I really think about that Melbourne game that we lost and just the differences in, you know, we have possession, mm-hmm, there's 30 or so seconds to go, and it's like we don't necessarily know what we needed to do in that scenario. Whereas now, and I think it was Lee Montagne on first crack that really highlighted just the little smart things that we were doing in that final quarter. There's the Jack Carroll on the ground, just, you know, dribble kicking it, not so it goes out of bounds, but just out of the contest enough that we can give ourselves a couple of seconds, no holding the ball. TDK into our forward line, knows that they've got the defensive outnumber. So instead of just kicking it in the air to Charlie and knowing they'll rebound, just dribbles along the ground, kind of panic ball inside 50. There's so many little things that we're now doing and getting the ball in the right places, getting Charlie back behind the ball. That,
yeah, we love that.
It's clear that we've trained this, and for us to now have that mentality piece of winning those games and being able to have that confidence that we can hold on and come from behind if we need to, it's just absolutely massive. Like, we're talking about a team that couldn't do it 2 years ago to now it feels like we can't lose these close games.
That makes me think that we need to watch back our, like, yeah, either post the Melbourne game 22 or the Collingwood game in 22. I feel like that would be a nice little transformation for us of how we spoke about the Blues back then to now, which is great.
Mm. 100%. And there's going to be a game where it's tight and we lose. It's bound to happen at some stage. And that's not going to automatically mean that we're no good anymore and we can't win the close one. That's just ludicrous. But yeah, for us to keep doing that now is amazing. But if we could just, we've broken the record, but end it there, boys. Yeah. I don't want to have a seventh win by under 6 points and an eighth. I can't do it. My heart can't take it.
Nah,
it's too stressful. Because I tell you what, when the two players flew up in the last seconds in our back line and both missed the football and it just bounced into Bolton's hands, my heart almost just fell out of my body at that moment. I almost threw up. It was just the worst thing. And then as soon as he fumbled, it was great. But everything flashed before my eyes. And I don't want to have to deal with that every single week. So, Carlton, keep winning. But, you know, 20 points. Give me something else.
Yeah. No, exactly right. I don't think we're not going to be dealing with that in a couple of weeks. Don't worry.
Yeah, but we'll pivot to our next segment. It's one that we introduced last week the first time. It's called Under the Radar. This is where we introduce a few topics, talking points that we don't feel like are getting enough chatter or love in either the media or in the Carlton discourse. Did you find anything from this game or in the last few weeks that you think is under the radar that you'd love to bring to the table?
I've got a couple, and you can tell me if they're not under the radar because you're a bit in the discourse a bit more than I am online. I think one for me, and I felt it before the game, and I felt it during the game and after the game, I think we can do a better job of using our sub.
Yeah,
Did you think about this during the game?
I didn't think about it as much. When the teams were announced and it looked like, I think, Durden was going to be the sub, I probably had that thought of, how's that going to work? Because I remember doing my team for the selection table on Pommy and Oz's YouTube channel. Got to give him the plug there. And then also our sort of team selection and team changes. That was the difficult thing for me that I was looking at. I know there's not a lot of players available, but is just a small forward, is that the right option? Mm. Does that give you enough elsewhere? I know you often like to talk about bringing in a player and it just allows other moves to happen, whether you bring in a defender and that means someone else can move up higher or whatever it is. It felt like we sort of pigeonholed ourselves a little with the small forward. What are you seeing with the sub and how would you prefer it to be used?
Yeah, no, you've pretty much nailed it, how I feel about it. I think I just would rather us use someone in a more of a high impact position. Mm. I'm not saying it should be Cottrell because I think he's a best 22 guy, but like we kind of spoke about last year when he felt like that perfect sub where he can come on and have an impact, you know, with his freshness and his speed and all of those things. Whereas, you know, and I can understand that maybe the plan was, hey, if we have no injuries, Fantasia will be the one that we sub off and it'll be a like for like. I get that to an extent, but I also just don't feel like, even if that is the plan, we could unleash someone with a bit more of a high impact player. And I know that the options for that aren't massive. Like it might mean a debut for like Binns or Moyer or something like that. But I don't know. I just hope that we don't get into this pattern moving forward where the sub is someone like this where Durds wasn't being put into positions where he could have a massive impact. He was in that Charlie chain to the miss, but you know, I think we could just utilize it better.
Does seem a little risky as well if you are planning to make a sub later, if that was the reason why it was Durden thinking, okay, if we need Fantasia out or we're doing that more positionally rather than someone that can kind of cover all bases, it feels a bit weird. Yeah. And I think that's why the small forward is such a weird one where he goes into that forward line. What does that really unlock? Even if you say Fantasia stays in and someone else comes out, like...
Exactly.
Does Fogarty go into the midfield or Kennedy a bit more? Is that enough? I'm not sure. Did you have someone in mind? Because I know because of all of our injuries currently, it is difficult to find someone else to be the sub. When we get a few players back, you know, I can see Elijah Hollands being someone who can come on as a sub if he's not already in the best team that can do a little bit more. Who would you have gone with this week rather than Durden that you feel could have been a bit more impactful or allowed for more moves to happen in the game?
I'm definitely empathetic of that situation and it would be more concerning for me when we have more players fit. But like I said, it probably, and it's not ideal, but it probably would have been one of the new guys.
Yeah.
Give one of them a go, bit of exposure, potentially playing in a, you know, in a way that might unlock something a bit different.
No, but, I do really like that.
If you want to look completely on the other side, then maybe it's good that we got Durds a little run before the break. If their ambition is for him to be best 22, which he's probably not for me, but maybe that's how they're thinking about it.
Yeah. And maybe because of how things are at the moment, I would have preferred him to have played in like the VFL game against Richmond because he doesn't have a lot of football and maybe he needs a bit more match fitness. That could have been a better thing to do. But yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how they use that over the next few months. I guess my sort of under the radar, and it's been, I think this is closer to, it's already been spoken about, but it may be a few little things I wanted to add onto it that make it a bit more under the radar, but it's about, I guess, Charlie Curnow and him sort of going back into defense when things are really tight, because I think it's such a good move. It obviously won us the game against the Gold Coast last year when he was able to do it. Helped us out again this time. The big thing I'm really liking from that sort of structural move is the leadership I'm actually seeing from Charlie Curnow that maybe I haven't seen a lot before. Him barking instruction to, I think it was Zach Williams, telling him to get back, you know, making sure that everyone's in the right spot. This is not something that I've seen from Charlie, even in the forward line. I don't seem to see him finger pointing and getting guys in the right areas. So for him to go into maybe an unfamiliar position and still be vocal, even though he's talking to a Zach Williams who has played a lot of football. Is he someone that you need to tell him? Doesn't matter. Charlie's going to do it. I love that. And knowing that we have guys like Doc that aren't there, Wiedering's not there, Walsh, other people that we see as massive on-field leaders. We spoke about what we're losing by not having Doc for the whole season, and that leadership on-field is something that we could struggle with. I think to see another player like Charlie, who's been elevated into the leadership group officially, to see him take a step up was massive. And the biggest thing I saw, which I think it was the third quarter, might have been the last, there was Richmond's midfield completely on top of us, dominating the clearances. I think they just had another goal from a centre clearance. Charlie just runs straight to the boys in the centre square before the ball was bounced. And he's revving up. I don't know, obviously, what he said, but he's there giving a rev up to the midfielders. Yeah. You know, I think that's massive because sometimes when you are in that little bubble on field, you know, you're trying to get each other up. But to have someone like Charlie come over and say, you know, don't worry about it, keep going, you boys have got this. Those little things I love to see. So, yeah, I just thought that sort of the leadership piece of Charlie and the growth in that area is really amazing to see.
Yeah, that's a great one. And I mean, yeah, as he's been doing those jobs of going back into defense, it feels like he never misses. Like, it feels like if he does that, he's doing a good job. He's taking the intercept marks, he's getting the spoils, or he's doing the leadership qualities, like you said. So that's a great one.
Yeah. What else did you have for us? Did you have anything else you see that's under the radar at the moment?
I've got one more, mainly because we spoke about it so much for the last 5 years of this podcast, and maybe not as much over the last couple of weeks. Is everyone just agreeing that TDK number one ruck is it now?
I think so. How are you feeling about it?
I am with it. It's been Nank and it's been the Big O. Like, two of the guys that maybe we would have flagged preseason as like, well, maybe that's a game where you'd want to have Pitt as well. And see, TDK's killing it.
Yeah, see, if you take the last quarter away, I thought TDK got smashed in the ruck, personally. Yeah, I thought Nank killed him. And that was a big issue.
I saw
people
saying that. But
yeah, really?
I didn't feel much. Not as much.
I guess when I was viewing the game and seeing the midfield sort of domination that Richmond had around us in the contest, I felt like Nank Kervis was one of the ringleaders in that. He's a very experienced ruckman. He's one of the better ones in the competition. And I felt that he was really winning that battle. And it's interesting. I don't know if a Pitt goes in there, how much that does help, because we've seen, I guess, the limitations of a Pitt net so far. Maybe once he is, you know, fully healthy and ready to go, that we're going to get a lot more out of him. Not writing him off at all. I think there's still potential for Pitt. He's still quite young in the ruck sort of age. A lot of ruckmen tend to be a bit better as they get older anyway. But I think that it's an interesting one, because would he have done any better in that situation? By the end, Nank Kervis went in a little bit underdone, and that last quarter he probably struggled, and maybe he did need a bit more of a rest, and that's where DeKoning stood up. And I'm not just saying that it's because Nank Kervis was not 100% and that's why DeKoning played well. Clearly, regardless, you still have to do it. And I was really impressed with what he did in the last quarter.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do wonder whether it's not 100% just yet. I like what I'm seeing from Harry in the ruck, and I like what it allows other players to do around him. But I maybe disagree in thinking that that was the game where I'm continually going, okay, yes, this is 100% perfect. Mm. There's no problems with it. But I'm keen to hear your take on why you're definitely like 100% at the moment saying it's TDK and Harry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect. That's for sure. I think, you pointed out that there's definitely two sides to this. One side is, how is TDK himself going in these situations? And the other side is, if it was Pitt and TDK, is that better holistically? I think we can agree that on the latter, it's not. Like, holistically, having Pitt there for what he does and the fact that that takes away a player, likely a small player, someone that's adding the pressure, all those things, that's not where we're at. I don't know. I saw some people saying similar to you, where it was like, wow, TDK's fourth quarter, thank God, or else you would have said that he was super beaten. I don't know. I just didn't see it as much that way. I felt like a lot more of the center influence was the mids and the lack of impact from a few of our mids rather than Nank himself. Even though he played a really good game, I felt like it was more of an even battle between each of them. And that's, I personally don't think we actually need to be having a clear winner in the ruck each week to be a really good team. Because with having TDK and Harry as our two rucks, like, the benefits that come that aren't in the ruck contest from those two is fantastic.
Yeah. It's huge. And it's, even though I don't think he won the ruck duel, I agree with you in saying the sort of difference in what it would have been in previous years, I guess, if Tom was by himself, he would have been completely dominated and it would have been an absolute disaster. Whereas now, even if he is maybe losing the duel, it's a 60-40 rather than it being a 80-20, I guess, loss. And that's probably the big thing that, if he's able to hold his own to a degree against such big, dominant ruckman, which is where we've always said is his limitation as things stand, is the physicality, because he's not that yet. He hasn't developed that with his body. For him to, be able to come away with a win in the end, particularly around that last quarter, I think that's a massive bonus for us and what we're able to do elsewhere. It's exciting to see, once we finally get a few players back on top of that, how much difference not having to play two rucks is going to be. Because I'm not sure we've 100% seen the positive because of the personnel we haven't had available. It's exciting.
Nailed it.
100%. So, look, that's honestly going to be a lot of the chatter from the game. But we've got to get into one of our fun segments, because Carlton have had their Hall of Fame ceremony. They had the proceedings last night. So I think it's about time that we jump into our Hall of Fame.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the ceremony of ceremonies. Straighten your tie, adjust your monocle, and raise a pinky for the navy blue corner Hall of Fame.
Yes, it's the navy blue corner Hall of Fame, and it may not be as prestigious as the Carlton Hall of Fame to some. They have to wear suits, you have to do all that, but we still have to keep the tie on. That's it. Doesn't matter what else you're wearing. As long as you've got a tie, you can be at the event. That's how we do things here. And our Hall of Fame, while some tend to honour past legends and greats of the football club, ours is really to honour and induct every single week something that has got us excited, something that's made us laugh, maybe made us angry. Who knows? Something in the community around the Carlton Football Club that we have seen that we want to induct every single week. There'll be one from Lockie, one from myself, and drop it in the comments. Head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner. Let us know what you want to induct, because if you start bringing them in, we will induct one from the listeners as well. Keen to get stuck in, keen to know who you've got to induct this week.
We've got this up too much.
Last week you had a good one. It was that lady, unnamed attendant at the Gabba, that was absolutely giving it to you when Brisbane were up and about. And so is it another staff member that you're hurling abuse to and getting kicked out of the ground this week, Lockie? Who is it? Who's going into the Hall of Fame?
I'm laughing because I've literally just realized that this story involves unnamed attendant number two.
He's done it again.
No, I didn't realize I have details. This underlying bias.
You hate hospitality workers. You hate, the people that are doing the tough jobs out there, Lockie.
Not at all. That was me. No, I feel like this segment's going to evolve into just story time, like one of us just sharing a story each week from the past week. But anyway, I alluded to this one to you over text, I think, at the end of last week. But my Hall of Fame inductee is going to be the MCC and their dress code.
Because it's
something that has been in place for obviously decades with the MCC. People, they take it very seriously, how prestigious it is and everything, even though it's basically exactly the same as everything else in the ground. But after the game, our mutual friend Josh was keen to grab a beer. He's a pleb, not in the MCC section.
Obviously.
So I'm texting him and I'm like, find a way to get in here. He appears, he's in the bar, but he's just wearing a white t-shirt.
Oh no. What does that mean? Lockie.
Within no time, security have seen him. They come
the
over.
SWAT and team say, has come in to clean him up.
They circle and they're like, mate, you're not MCC. Where's your collar? So, of course, they're telling him to get out and he's about to leave. And then one of the friends that we're with, she is also wearing a tee, but he's wearing an open collared shirt over the top. Big brain, straight onto Josh. Now he's got the collar on. The security comes back 30 seconds later, has a look and walks away. Just laughable. Laughable how easily boycottable this is, because females don't have to wear collars.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I don't know how it works for the females. Are they allowed to just wear anything? Do they have to wear a cocktail dress? What's going on? Because we have to wear, obviously, the collar. They're just the t-shirt's fine to get in.
How ridiculous is that? Then now one collar to another, and now everything's right in the world. So that's my inductee.
Maybe we should trial this. Maybe we should see how far we could possibly go in this scenario.
I like it.
See how ridiculous, because you have to have a collar. Maybe that's all you've got. You've taped a collar to a t-shirt. You've sewn it in. Does that count? Is that enough?
How comically large can you make your collar before?
Does the collar have to be around the neck? Maybe you've cut it off your shirt and put it around your wrist. Maybe that's enough.
We need to examine the legislation and see how rogue we can get. I like where your head's at.
But I will have a bit of a gripe with the MCC, because I understand the whole idea is, okay, we're a little bit more fancy. We've got to have the college shirt. Yet you can chuck, like, I saw, you know, old mate, your man, with the footy jumper over the top. Now, if I'm in the MCC, surely that's not allowed. I can't believe things like that are apparently fine. It's like, well, he's still got the college shirt, but you can just wear the jumper. But apparently, you know, take the collar away and it's no good. It's bizarre.
Did you just your mate, a guest of the show, a friend of the show?
The great J-Rob. We love him. We absolutely love him. Big shout out. But I like that he's towing the line. He's going, no, stuff you. I'm wearing my collar. Kick me out. Have fun.
It's true. He's a rule breaker. All right, whatever you got. Because you talked this segment up, so you got to deliver now.
Oh, yeah. See, this is the interesting one. I do have an unnamed,
MCG,
I guess.
MCG bathrooms.
That was Marvel. And I haven't been there yet. So there could be something else that happens Friday. This season with Marvel once we're there. But this does kind of go to an unnamed attendant, unnamed star. But in a,
such have to rename the segment.
Such a positive way, because I have a very strict rule with the football. There's only one. And that is, the only way that you get jam donuts after the game is if Cotton win. It was something that was very much as a child. Maybe this is just trauma. And maybe it's just smart by my parents saying, like, I don't have to go and get donuts because we've lost. Oh, it's only if you win you get them, buddy. And we just got to save some money and time. But finally, we get a dub. We beat Richmond and it's donut time. Tell you what, it was a nervous, nervous wait. So there's multiple lines in this donut establishment, and I'm having a look here, and you know, it's six jam donuts. That's what everyone's getting. There are not many jam donuts left in the warmer. I'm starting to stress.
Too many blue baggers.
I'm starting to have a look at the lines and being like, okay, which staff are moving faster here? This line's a little bit longer than the other one. I'm gonna run out. Tell you what. Into the Hall of Fame goes whoever was the attendant in my line.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen someone move faster. While the other line was, what would you like? Six donuts? Okay, we'll slowly get six donuts. This person.
Was that with Jan?
Six donuts. Bang, bang, bang. We're getting them out here. Next person, out of the way. You pay. I don't even care if you pay. We're just handing out donuts. They're throwing them at everyone. I reckon there was probably about four left after we snagged our six. So, absolute stiff if you were after me in the line. You missed out, but I'm happy. I got my donut. So big shout out to the service attendant at that place. I've never seen them move so well to ensure that I got my six jammies.
Well said. I think we do need to change this segment to just attendant watch, and then we'll make all time something different. And I could so imagine you after a few footy beers as well, being in one of those lines and seeing a Richmond supporter in the line as well. And
you don't get like, them. Slap. I've said this.
There is a finite amount of donuts, winners only.
I have jokingly said, and I wonder when it will happen, that I'll be walking past someone, they've lost, they've got the donuts, and it's just a slap out of the hands being like, what are you doing, mate? Losers don't get your donuts. It just, you know, it has to happen one day. And I think if I'm about to miss out on mine, it's probably going to happen. There'll be a Richmond kid that is going to be crying because he's just lost his donuts. But that's the Hall of Fame this week. Let us know if you ran into something strange at the football, if you saw anything funny that you liked from the game. If you want to just have a rant, chuck it in the comments right now on YouTube, on the Blue Abroad channel. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. If you're here watching this, what are you doing? Subscribe, but then leave a comment, leave what you'd want to induct this week. And if you're listening in podcast form over the socials at Navy Blue Corner, links will be in the show notes in the description to make it only one click away. But speaking of the listeners, speaking of the viewers, we like to get them involved in the podcast, and this is their segment. It is the big hot seat that they get to throw us in every single week with the listener questions. We ask them on Twitter. So, mate, you've got to follow the socials if you want to send in a question. Twitter and Instagram, yes. Normally where we do it. I was lazy, so it was just Twitter. This week, what are the people asking, Lockie?
So these all fall into a nice little category altogether because they all address a certain player.
Mm.
Four different players. Four questions, four players. And this is what I'm going to ask from you is I want general vibe on this player, whether you would play him against North and whether you think he'll play against North. Ooh. So kind of like, will the club play him? Will you play him? And maybe just a few words on the player.
Huge.
So I'm going to start with the great man, Adrian Sal. Does Orazio need a spell?
Ooh, not the player I thought was going to be thrown out there. General vibe at the moment is I'm very happy he is not injured. This is an incredible thing that it was real. The real worry as he was coming across was how many games are we going to get out of this guy? For him to play two out of two is perfect. You know, I need him to get 15 games in so he can, you know, get my prediction correct in all those small forwards kicking about 180 goals or whatever ridiculous prediction I had at the start of the year. But the vibe around him is I'm just happy he's out there. I think we saw a lot better performance last week. I liked some of his linking play, but yeah, there is a bit of an issue at the moment in hitting the scoreboard and I guess creating those looks at the moment. Thought he was quite down in that Richmond game. A lot of those small forwards, still a bit of an issue. Would I play him against North? Right now, if Motlop is good, and I got to speak to the great man at the Hall of Fame event, and he says it's just kind of one of those things with the toe that there's still a bit of pain there. He's still doing some training, but it just basically just who knows. But the timeline on him, I guess, to have that transparency that I'm always after is a bit more of that. As soon as the pain disappears, he's just ready to go. So I think hopefully he should be there by all accounts. But I think with Motlop coming in, I'm probably dropping Always instead. Might be controversial, but I would play him. And I think he would probably be ahead judging off the preseason that we did see.
And do you think that's what the club will do?
Yeah, I believe they would stage. I reckon they rate him a little bit higher than Always at this stage.
Me too. I feel like I'm suddenly going to be leading the Orazio fan club because, I've been really happy with what I've seen, and I think it's only going to get better and better.
Yeah.
And I think he brings something that our other smalls don't in terms of that linking and stuff, and I just think it's going to get better and better. Give him a spell now. When people say spell, like, he's going to have a week off now regardless, which is great.
Yeah.
Play him against North is my feeling.
I think if we didn't have this bye, he probably takes the week off. Maybe just for resting and managing his body. The fact that we've got one built into the season. I was hot on hating the bye at the start of the year. Same. I have changed my tune. This is the greatest thing ever. We need them every single week. Can we just have a game bye? Because it's great. And like for the injured players that we have, like the timing could not be better to get that extra week and all of a sudden Wietering, does Martin come back in, Motlop? It's perfect.
So the next one's from So Race Boy 458. What did you guys, aka Ian, because this is Ian's segment, make of Cunningham's game? I thought he was a bit underrated on the night.
I've seen some weird conjecture around Cunningham. I've seen some really happy, some think he was really quiet. I liked him again. I thought that's 2 weeks in a row where he maybe hasn't had the four-quarter perfect performance. He's been involved the whole time. But it's just those little chains and passages when he is involved just add so much. Like the start of the game, he's in everything, getting the hands out, being able to run and deliver amazingly inside 50. He adds, like you're saying with Orazio, I'm not sure there's anyone else that we have currently that does what a Cunningham can do with how silky he is around the ball. Love what he brings. And that higher forward, it's such a hard position. Sometimes you're just not going to be around it. They call it the graveyard for a reason. And I don't know, vibe-wise, I like what I'm seeing. I'd be playing him because I'm not sure there's someone else that is doing what he's doing. And I think his standard's good at the moment. Still want more from him, but happy. And yeah, I reckon we'll play him again. I don't see any reason to drop Cunningham. How are you seeing the great man?
I do love David. I'm not sold of where we're at, mainly because we're just in this position now where there's so many guys that are locked in of best 22. And we do have a bunch of guys that are going to be looking to come back in. I'm just like guys like Fogarty, and the role that he plays in the team has just become more and more cemented to me. Whereas guys like Cunningham, I'm just like, even though I'm happy, I don't know. I'm curious if there's a better way that we could be using a player in that role.
See, weirdly, the player that I love him, and the breaking news is he's just re-signed for about three more years in a Matty Cotterill. I reckon he's surprisingly been quite down on his first 2 weeks. And someone at the end of last season thought he had really taken that next step, become such a vital player for us, was hoping he could, you know, start the season that way again. He's been a bit light on so far. So I would probably have him on form out of those kind of half forward players as the one to make way if you need to bring someone else in, like a Hollins. And but that doesn't mean that he's completely out of contention. And what I do like from him, and I'll probably say the same thing on an Adam Chera, who has been probably down in the first 2 weeks. It's about whenever you get that opportunity, you take it. And Chera has that shot in front of goal, gets it, beautiful. Same again for Cotterill, has that set shot, make sure of it. Those are the little things you need to be doing when you're not playing great football. And so, it hasn't been amazing, but I think I have Cunners just over Cotterill on form right now.
Yep, I'm actually in full agreement with that. You can take this question where you want. I was going to focus on Elijah, and you have mentioned him. So from Brad Nickel, he mentioned another winger. Ollie Holland's form is a slight concern. So with the potential inclusion of Elijah against North, and hopefully we'll see a bit more of him, who do we expect Elijah to come in for?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's another that probably hasn't been at his best that we have seen. He's still so young. We know he's going to be playing better football. Maybe, like, I like that you brought up the heavy training loads maybe hurting those bigger runners. Although you could say, I think Akers has still been incredible and it hasn't really affected him. I think, going into the season, it was very much it's Akers and Holland's wings all year. But I don't know, with form tending a certain way, is there room for Ollie to come out of that team? Potentially. I think right now, I'm not sure there is a player that has really knocked down the door enough to warrant him coming in over an Ollie because of the runs on the board. As far as Elijah, I reckon he comes straight in if I'm making the decision.
So do I.
Because of what I saw in the preseason, thought he was one of our better players. It was him and Harry were the two that I was really blown away with and loving every single thing that they were bringing to the table.
Yep.
Who comes out? That's really tough. It might depend on who else is available, because I think Lewis Young would come out for Wiedering.
Agreed.
Had a bit of a poor game, unfortunately. After the big one against Brisbane, he was back to that little, just panicking a little bit where you just start to feel really nervous when the ball goes near him. But he's doing a job, and he's doing it better than anyone else I think we have available at the moment. So I really love it. He's out there giving everything. You got Walsh, Motlop, Martin, and him. And who comes out? I think that Walsh, because he is a while away, it probably allows Carroll for me to stay in that team. Mm-hmm. Motlop would come in for Owies. Martin would be the one I would probably have coming in for Kennedy.
Me too.
But if Martin isn't available, I reckon Hollins just probably takes that Kennedy spot.
So do I.
I think he's been someone that's been a little underwhelming. I'm aware we're asking him to play a bit of a different role in that sort of forward midfield split, but I think we'll be able to get a lot more out of an Elijah. But I think, regardless, I'm finding a way to bring him into the team.
Aligned as always, Brownie. This is what we love to see. I'm in agreement. It's not Kennedy's fault. He's in this spot. Like, he's doing the role that he's being asked to. But I think we need one of these other guys to do it. But I think it has shown. I mean, it's tough to disagree with this. There, we need to have someone in that role in this team.
Yeah.
If it's, we cannot just be rolling with two marking threats up forward, it's not enough. So I agree that Kennedy's probably the best option we have right now, but man.
And it's really nice to, I guess, see the depth as well that we've kind of got on display. We were so worried and nervous heading into the season. It wasn't just that we'd kind of written off us against Brisbane, but there was a growing concern in, shit, what if we also lose to Richmond and we go into the break 0-2 because we have so many players out? All of a sudden, you go in the opposite with two wins and the depth starts to look good. We've seen some of these players step up and play some really pivotal roles. And other players, take that gap that we needed them to. And it's a good position to be in now where we're talking about some players coming in and it is a little bit difficult to make way. And I like around this Elijah Hollands, Cottrell, those sorts of players where it's not going to be every single week just on, this player has to play every single week. You can rotate it. And just because someone's out on form doesn't mean that they won't go back into the team at some stage. There's a lot to rotate through this team. The competition for spots is going to be great to see. It's a battle that once these guys are healthy, us selecting the team every week, it's one of the most difficult jobs in the league right now.
Totally agree. And we don't have a question about this one, but to round it out, what's your 15-second take on where Marchbank fits into things at the moment?
Weird. Interesting. I originally would have had him above Kemp.
Yep.
Kemp's been, I thought he was really good last week, did some really good things again this week, had a few errors, but a lot did.
Yep.
I don't think you can drop Kemp from the performances that he's put in so far. So, once Marchie's back, he has to prove it. And then maybe it's a few down weeks before I'm changing things.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't play all four?
No, I'm not playing all four. Unless, I don't know, maybe if there's a lineup where there's heaps of tall forwards and matchup wise, you think it'll work.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like last year when we all probably wanted like a George Hewitt in there over a Kennedy, but Kennedy comes in and plays the better role. So it's, you can't come in and then vice versa. Now Hewitt's playing really good football. I'd probably want Kennedy in, but you can't have it. And that might be the circumstance around why the players in the team will be while they'll hold their spot.
Yep. Agree. And let's round it out with a guy that, hasn't had much airtime on the podcast this year. Will we see more of it? So from our good friend Jacqueline Hunt, how would you use Harry Lemmy? Are you waiting until there's an injury or could he potentially be included as a third tall? That's something we've really talked about.
It's very interesting.
If you need another marking option, we've got a guy there.
Yeah. I was curious to see what they would do with the ruck situation because De Koning's rucking all the time. Harry's going in there and that's Mackay. That is whether you'd see a guy like a Lemmy get some game time with that structure rather than it being a pit if we need it at certain stages. I'm probably in the camp where I don't think there's much of a need to throw him in just yet. Keep developing. I want to see a bit more before he does make his debut. But I think if there is an injury, and God forbid there can't be. It's not happening. Not putting in the universe. But in that scenario, you're probably bringing Pitt in and having De Koning play more forward rather than a Lemmy. That's where I sit currently. But I don't know. If he starts kicking a ridiculous amount of goals in the VFL and putting in those performances, then I think we sort of revisit that conversation. Whereas right now, I'm really relaxed with where it is and happy to just see him, learn his craft in the twos.
Yep. I agree. But if in that scenario that there was an injury, I'd put some genuine thought into those two scenarios you just mentioned. It wouldn't be just an immediate case for me of, okay, well, that's Pitt in and TDK forward. I think there would be some discussion around that, even though I probably would lean your way.
No, 100%. So the last thing I think that we need to cover before we wrap this beautiful episode up is, of course, the weekly votes, Lockie. The Navy Blue Corner, Blue Bagger, Badge of Honor, one of the greatest names of all time for this award. And you've changed up the voting for those that missed last week. It's not just your 3-2-1, who is the best players, and make it easy. There's too many of those going around, so you wanted to change it up. And Lockie, the voting is that 3 is the best player, 2 is the player that went above almost what we expect to see from them, that real standout. 1, you can give it to anyone for any single reason. I'm keen to hear who you've given your votes to and how you've seen particularly that that number 2 vote.
Do you like 3-2-1 or 1-2-3? Which way should we be tackling these each week?
I like the 3-2-1. I like going the best first and then seeing the others. Yeah. Glad we're aligned.
Patrick Cripps is going to be one of the greatest Carlton players of all time. And
live member now as well, mate.
Absolutely. And he's just getting better. No. I just thought that he was the most important and best player on the ground for us. Like you said, he was doing some things that we don't seem to expect from him anymore, like being an absolute burst guy and being involved in anything, tackling heaps, just being so pivotal in his role. 2 for me was, my God, Mitch All-Australian McGovern.
I'm spewing. I didn't run that back this year. All of a sudden, it's getting momentum, and everyone laughed at me last season. All the opposition supporters are saying, mate, Mitch McGovern's a dud, all Australian. He's just about a lock at the moment.
Oh, my God. He just does both so well. Like, I can't think of another player that does so well defensively and can then launch it so well the other way.
Like, he's phenomenal. Like, he's so good.
And we're going to be dealing with a scenario soon where I feel like he's going to have even more ability to do that when Wiedering comes back and everything's even more sound down back, which is just beautiful. And then the one for me, this not a very exciting 3-2-1 for me this week, but I have to give Harry a vote because he still was arguably, you could argue that he was the most important player of the game, kicking big goals, being confident, just doing heaps of good stuff. Just so happy for him. 7 tackles from Harry. Couple of hit outs, a couple of clearances, like what is
a couple of casual goals from 60 meters out. He can't kick, he can't kick, so it doesn't matter. But I feel like you introduced this new voting system to try and get us to do something different, Lockie. What have you done? I hate it. I almost want to change my votes because we're completely aligned again, mate. The 3-2-1 have gone the exact same this week, and
that's honestly,
Gov was gonna get the 3. But then I think there was a couple of moments later in the game, made a few more mistakes, and Paddy Cripps was just phenomenal. And he missed out on the votes last week, Cripper. Thought he was great last week again. So, yeah, I think he gets my 3. And, yeah, the 2 vote was really difficult this week. Last week I felt it was way easier. Whereas, I just thought that I thought Gov might have got your 3 and you'd laugh at my McGovern for 2 because he was so good. No. But knowing what he has to do down back without Wiedering, and you don't expect him to have that game where he gets 20-something disposals, every intercept ever, every score launches off what Gov's been able to do. So, yeah, I agree. I had him for the 2 because of those reasons. And then you just can't not give the votes to Harry. Everything he's been through, for him to be almost the guy that when he takes a mark now, you're going, oh, it's a goal. Don't have to worry about it. I mean, it's insane, the narrative. It feels like we're going to keep bringing this up every single week. Where are we talking about, you know, Charlie Curnow, awful kick in front of goal because he makes one mistake. Bolton misses heaps down the other end. Are they saying that he's not a good footballer? It doesn't happen. And so great to see Harry just back to kicking big snags.
Oh, I don't think we're going to be talking about this every week. I think this is going to die out very quickly, this narrative. Yeah, I think it might even be gone by the North game, truly.
It could. It kicks another like 3 or 4. We're not going to be chatting about it. But is there anything else that you wanted to talk about this game, about Carlton as we head into the bye before we wrap this episode up, Lockie?
I'm good. I'm excited to have, like you said, I'm not unhappy that we're going to have a week off from a game right here. This feels good for us. Brisbane are going to have a bye. They've got some hard thinking to do and they need to look at themselves in the mirror. And for us, we're just going to recuperate and come out firing in a couple of weeks.
Could not have said it better. But that is going to wrap up the episode this week. We've got a bye, but that doesn't mean that the content stops. We've got a lot in store for next week. We'll be back here on Blue Abroad again Wednesday night with a bit of a build-up. Obviously, there won't be a game to talk about, but we'll be going through all the regular segments, talking about all the breaking news, reacting to it all. If there's any news stories that are under the radar, if there's any meltdown in the media, which hasn't happened in a few weeks, we'll be here to talk about it. It's going to be a lot of fun building up the Good Friday clash against North. And then, don't you worry, we're going for a double. We'll have a second bit of content for you over on our YouTube show, Navy Blue Corner. We'll have links everywhere as well, so you don't miss it. Bit of a different video from us. Those that followed in the preseason would have seen that we had a couple of game challenges. We had a bit of a guess the 22, which was beautiful. But the issue was we tied. Lockie and I are 1-1. Going into the season, we need a tiebreaker. And so we're going to be throwing it back with another guess the 22 show where basically we're going to be getting that wheel involved again, spinning it to maybe pick the year. We're happy to get some suggestions thrown out there, but basically a game will be selected, a big pivotal game from Carlton's history. The other guy has to guess the 22 that played on that fateful day. The one with the most correct answers goes home with the chocolates. We need a winner. So that'll be over on the Navy Blue Corner YouTube channel or wherever you listen to it in streaming form. It's going to be out there for you. But plenty to look forward to. Very keen to get into it. The Blues are 2-0. What a bloody start. Up the baggers. See you guys next time.